Hi, I'm Colin Ketchin, and you're about to listen to the pilot episode of the Common Geeking Program. It's a book club for geek culture. I'm the co-creator and co-producer of the show, and I will be hosting this pilot episode that you've clicked on. Now, I want to say thanks for checking us out, but also wanted to give you a heads up that the audio in this first episode is a bit unrefined. Following episodes are smoother, more structured, and sound less like three guys farting into a tin can and one guy talking into a gaming mic. If the quality here is too much to take, feel free to start a bit further down the feed. These episodes are meant to be enjoyed individually, but if you stick around through them all, it'll be even better. Now with that out of the way, this episode is a lot of fun. I hope you enjoy our show, and thank you for listening to this.
Hello, this is the Common Geeking Program. This is intended as a sort of book club of nerd culture. Each episode we plan to have a topic, a game, an episode, a book, or whatever from nerd culture. It doesn't matter if it's popular or obscure. And discuss it from various geeky, nerdy perspectives. And this is our first go-around. We have some plans, but right now there's four of us. We all have our own little domains of nerd culture. So starting over here, we have...
Austin. My name's Austin. I know some stuff about Tolkien and Middle-earth history. Yeah.
I'm Jeff, and I'm going to be talking from the perspective of someone who knows a lot about Pokemans.
I'm Timel. I'll be talking about a game called Transistor.
We call him Chatter.
Yeah, he said Timel. I think we call him that name so infrequently, all of us just looked at him like, is that your name?
I knew Chowder's name.
Just,
I'm not going to stop calling him Chowder, so I should explain that that's what I'm going to be calling him.
Yeah.
To all two of you watching or listening,
no, it's going to be
Chowder too.
Well, it's going to be at least five, because I think we're all going to listen to it.
Yeah, probably.
Or at least the three of us are going to listen to it, and I'll make my roommate listen to it. and then maybe one other person who gives a shit.
Three
anyway,
of us.
I'm sure one of us in the room doesn't give a shit. I wonder who that is.
he was implying Austin.
So, my name is Colin. I'm hosting the week. I know an exorbitant amount about the Star Trek franchise. So as host, what I've done this week is I've picked our topic. I chose an episode of Star Trek for everybody in this group to take a peek at, spend some time with.
I didn't watch it.
I was pleasantly surprised.
There's always one person in a book club.
Who just shows up.
I figure you'd like come for the free food, but one, there is no free food. And two, it's your house, so if there's no free food, it's your fault.
There is not. And it is my fault. I did watch it though.
Oh,
that
we could have. Were we gonna order pizza? Was that a thing? I definitely have some.
Oh shit! Yeah, we kind of jumped the gun on that. Do we want to? Do we want to do that now?
Captain, I want to call for a recess.
So the episode I picked this week of Star Trek, it's from the series Star Trek: The Next Generation. It is Season 2, Episode 9, The Measure of a Man. This is actually a pretty seminal moment in the series. This is considered the first great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. I have some other fun little trivia about it. Fun because I think everything with Star Trek is fun. So we're going to talk about it. Me as a Trekkie, I'm going to try and lead the conversation. But we have a Tolkien, we have a Pokemon, and we have a Transistor. So we're going to pull in. Basically, I want them to challenge my feelings about Star Trek by introducing me to other things that I don't really give a shit about.
Would you say that Austin is the token for this guy?
we can edit that.
Cool. So I figure we should start by, let's just kind of recap the episode. I took some pretty copious notes. I hope you guys at least took something of points you want to discuss.
I mean, my notes were watching it 15 minutes before we started.
Fair enough. Okay.
Technically, that's just my notes.
So, Measure of a Man. Star Trek The Next Generation, set in a utopian society about 300 years in the future, and it's just on a spaceship where they explore. They seek out new life and new civilizations. And in this episode, Data, an emotionless android, he sits down for a game of poker. Now, it's his first time playing poker, and everyone's sitting around the table, and he's like, I've done all the math on this. And then he loses, because Commander Riker bluffs him.
Colin, I think you know too much about Star Trek to be the one summarizing this episode.
Yeah.
Because you think a lot of these points are relevant, which I'm sure they are. Yeah, certainly. But it would be quite a long explanation.
All right, so how would you summarize from this point forward? Let's go.
All right. So, okay, so this robot dude, right? Basically a Pokemon.
Oh God!
And we, you know, it's about it. It's like the whole discussion, right? Like, is it okay that we train Pokemon, that they're on our teams? Are they our property or are they our friends? Right? That's basically what this whole episode about about Pokemon.
Oh my God!
I don't know what direction you thought this was gonna go in.
No, I didn't know.
So basically, they hold this whole trial, right? And they hear from the perspective of someone who is a Pokemon, and they hear from the perspective of someone who is not a Pokemon.
Oh my God.
And they're basically talking about Pokemon rights.
So, to add a little more fleshed out detail, Data, he discovers in the beginning, like, oh man, I know stuff, but humans know more. Oh. And then this guy comes on the ship like, hey, you're a robot. I want to know how you work, so I'm going to take you apart. And everyone on the ship is like, no, you don't do that.
You can't just take apart someone's Pokemon.
Yeah, you can't just throw a Master Ball at someone else's Pokemon in the middle of a battle. Am I using that right?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah.
Oh, sweet, nailed it.
It just wouldn't work, yeah.
Yeah, it just wouldn't work. But he's like, I have all this legal standing. So they basically hold a trial, you got that part right, to determine whether or not Data as a robot has rights as a person. And in this trial, the people prosecuting him are like, you're a machine. I can turn you off. I can take your arm off. And I don't know if you guys noticed this. When Riker takes off Data's arm to demonstrate, hey, you're just a robot, the hand kind of collapses, yeah, and it leaves just the middle finger extended a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
That's, for a guy who has no emotions, that was a pretty big fuck you to Commander Maddox, who's trying to disassemble him.
I don't know how to relate this to Pokemon. But I liked the whole concept of not only of the whole philosophical argument, but also the concept of the officer Maddox having to basically go against his friend.
Yeah. Well, Riker was the person prosecuting.
Riker
went against Data. Yeah, Maddox was the asshole. It felt a little contrived narratively, but it made for a lot of good tension. Like, Riker was like, ugh, I just had to poke my friend in the butthole and turn him off. That was just backwards from what I normally
hate
do.
When that happens.
It's a disaster.
I have to question why any court would allow a dude's friend to prosecute him.
Because I guess the justification in the episode was, we need to go with like the highest ranking officers, and this is a new starbase, and no one's around here, so you guys are going to do it. Now, I also want to point out, there was an admiral there in the beginning.
Yeah.
He was like, here's Maddox, here you go, here's this guy.
That's a good point.
And then he disappeared as soon as they wanted to actually have the court case. I guess it's just narratively inconvenient.
They would have had to, like, flesh out his character and shit.
To be fair, I'm pretty sure that that particular admiral comes back in later episodes just as an admiral.
He does come back, yeah, as an admiral.
Yeah, you're right. Oh my God, I just didn't expect anyone else to not belong. I'm used to talking about Star Trek and getting smacked. So in the trial, Riker says, like, you're a robot. I'm going to turn you off. Take your arm off. Fuck the middle finger. Throw your arm in space.
Yeah.
And then Picard is like, oh, he almost convinced me. And then he goes to Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah. And I really like that it was her character that gave what was essentially the core of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that by creating these androids and having them be subservient to us, have we not doomed the entire race to slavery?
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it was a black character who said it, it's a very poignant moment.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, Maddox wants to build all these androids, and Guinan incepts Picard to think, yeah, this is just all about he's going to accidentally make slavery forever. And then Picard brings that to the courtroom, and he's like, hey, Maddox, can you even prove, can't prove Data's alive, can you prove I'm alive? And he's like, this is exceedingly difficult. And he just can't handle any of it.
He's a whiny shit.
He's kind of a whiny shit who's just not getting what he wants.
I want my research materials. I don't want to deal with things that have feelings. I can't enslave a race.
Yeah. It's pretty hard. You might say he's trying to accidentally be Sauron.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's accidental. Okay. We can get to that.
So in the court, he gets to this point and Prut says to Maddox, "Hey, you're accidentally trying to make slaves." And he's like, "Oh, I guess I didn't think about that when proposing this to Starfleet and getting permission to disassemble your crew member. That never crossed my mind."
Cool. Yeah, I would really think that someone who, like, devoted their entire lives to, like, researching artificial intelligence would have thought about the issue philosophically at all.
Yeah, that's a pretty big thing we deal with today a lot, the ideas behind artificial intelligence. It's a very real conversation. And within the fiction of Star Trek, Data's been around for, like, 30 years, and he didn't just join Starfleet. He, like, had a bit of a life and then joined Starfleet because he liked it. So it's not like they built him.
They just hired him.
Yeah, he enlisted himself. He went to the academy. So it's not like they built him and now they're saying he's property because he chose to be a part of that. Yeah. I felt like there was a lot unexplored, but the stuff they did explore was good.
Because is Porygon not a real Pokemon just because it was made by humans?
I rest my case. Mewtwo's made by humans, and he is considered a Pokemon.
Yeah, absolutely. Good argument there from our transistor person.
So the whole thing kind of wraps up. The lady presiding over the course, who really just wants Picard's captain's log, is she's just trying to fuck him the whole episode. Yeah. She like gets distracted from the trial sometimes just to be like, I'm gonna wink at you, Picard. It's like, Louvois, shut your mouth. But she kind of says, does Data have a soul? I don't know. Do I have a soul? I don't know. He has rights. Fuck it. And then Riker's like, Data, I'm so sorry I had to fight against you. And Data's like, actually, I think you kind of saved my life. Happy ending. Slavery discussed. Data saved.
I was really surprised at that. I thought there were, like, I didn't, because Data is such a logical character that it never crossed my mind that he'd take issue with Riker having to, go against him like that. I was, when that problem was brought up, I was expecting the rest of the crew to kind of sit in as a jury and for the end of episode to end with kind of like a, oh yay, we did it, but bitter moment of everyone kind of shunning Riker.
Mm-hmm. My opinion of this as a Trekkie is I think it does the great thing where it explores, you know, some pretty multi-layered ideas, but compared to some other episodes, it does feel a little shallow in terms of how deeply it explores them, and like it's a very confined setting, so it gives you a refined result. But it doesn't explore it as deeply as you could in maybe a longer form setting than 45 minutes.
Right, yeah. Because you got to put it in the context to make the episode make sense instead of just having it be the characters of Star Trek The Next Generation sitting around talking about Data's sentience.
Yeah. So that was not a super cohesive description of the episode. If anyone's listening, I highly recommend watching it, not just for context of this discussion. It's a legitimately good episode of television. What are your guys' thoughts on it? You know, as people coming from your domain's sort of lenses, how'd you guys feel about this episode as a whole?
Finally talking about Transistor.
Oh, I've never played it, so I'm curious.
It's really good, actually.
I want to play it.
Transistor is a game about this character named Red, and she lives in this society where everyone is, like, online.
Mm-hmm. They're always connected.
They're always connected, yeah. AI that, like, called The Process that, like, does everything from, like, building buildings to sewage to whatever it is, starts to go haywire because of a group called the Camarada. And basically, Red is now trying to get to the bottom of the whole shit. I want to talk about Transistor because AI is doing the work for people, and you know, they both, you know, look to mankind's future and go, what happens when AI starts to become humanoid?
That is way more on point than I thought it was going to be. holy shit!
Yeah.
So the difference is that Star Trek focuses on what creating androids and AIs to do our work be considered slavery. Whereas Transistor is more focused on the human aspect, on like how it affects people and society, and if like by having these AIs, would it affect a person's feelings of purpose and self? Because throughout the game, you get these powers, and like these powers aren't just powers, but like they're like sort of the data of people who have died.
Yeah, pretty much.
Data.
And that data is essentially their soul. And you can actually learn about these characters, right?
Yeah.
And if you look at the occupation of each of these characters, there are things like artists, talk show hosts, detectives. But, like, you never see a blue-collar worker. You don't see a plumber, construction worker, anything like that.
Yeah, and that's part of, like, the utopia of Star Trek. Deeper context behind this is, like, technology has allowed them to not worry about common disease or internal conflict. One of the staples of the show, and that the writers hated in the first two seasons are actually crap on the show. This is the shining gem of the first two seasons.
Okay.
One of the problems was Gene Roddenberry and then the people who replaced him on the show were like, you can't have interpersonal conflict between people. And they're like, how do you write a dramatic show without interpersonal conflict? And this show does a good job of fabricating it by pitting Riker against Data in this instance. But it's like that idea permeates Star Trek. And it's like, I think what you just mentioned is a good example of that, where it's like when you eliminate the need for all this lower end stuff on, like, what is Bloom's taxonomy? Of just like you eliminate like that lower shelf
that's,
and every
no that's Maslow's hierarchy. Bloom's taxonomy is cognitive functions.
There we go, like shelter and stuff. And when everybody has basic needs, you just kind of focus on what you want to do. It's basically a meritocracy. It kind of sounds like that's a similar theme between the two.
Yeah, definitely. Although Transistor is actually a deconstruction of that meritocracy.
Okay.
If you read Red's bio, you'll know that like there's this sense of unrest. The way I come to interpret it is that sort of looking at like how people feel uneasy when they're essentially a part of the cloud.
Yeah, I have a couple of thoughts about this episode that might tie back into that. That's actually interesting. I'm more intrigued to play this game.
Yeah, no, it's really fun.
Austin, did you have any particular?
Oh yeah, no, I got a lot of shit. We can talk about Maddox as Sauron, but like, I mean, but the genesis of Tolkien's universe. Well,
don't you mean the genesect of Tolkien's universe?
No. Anyway, one of the conceits of Tolkien's universe is that it was created by like one god, and he splits himself up. He's called Eru. He's the one, but like the elves call him Iluvatar, and we listen to them because they're important. And you know, they're pretty and smart and they're better than everyone else because they suck. So there's this one god and he splits himself up into a bunch of different pieces to like to make friends to help him. You know, that's how gods work. So everyone, all of these sort of angelic figures start out trying to help him to create the universe and stuff. He does it by conducting them as a choir. They sing and the universe is made. It's sort of simultaneous, but it's also portentous. It's a really weird cycle of events. Anyway, how Maddox works is, sorry, I'm taking it a bit back from Sauron. Now we're going to the original bad guy in the Tolkien universe is Melkor, who we don't call Melkor because we don't like him. The elves call him Morgoth.
My friend who has also read the Silmarillion tells me that he hates how people have names for things, and the elves are like, here's a different name for it.
Yeah.
And people are just like, okay, we'll call it that.
Yeah, I mean, the elves are the oldest ones, so people listen to them.
That's fair.
Like, humans are younger, hobbits are largely irrelevant to history for them for a long time. But Melkor and Sauron and Saruman and all of those people who turn bad through their, like, reliance on artifice and industry and creating people and enslaving races and stuff, they do so from actually like the good intentions of wanting to create stuff of their own, which sounds, you know, it's like Maddox. It's just,
Because I know about Morgoth, but I don't know that. I always thought he was just like inherently bad and like Sauron was good, but then followed Morgoth.
Well, yeah, what happened was Morgoth, first, he was the one piece of Iluvatar's person that he took apart, and he gave him like a little bit of everything that was inside him.
Mm.
Other people had certain qualities of him. There's this power who's in charge of like the air and the sky. There's one who's in charge of the sea. There's this lady who's in charge of the trees and the plants and stuff. And you know, there's this guy who likes wrestling, and he's kind of weird.
Is Tom Bombadil a shard of Iluvatar?
Nobody fucking knows what Tom Bombadil is. We can talk about that later.
Yeah, all right, that should be its own episode.
Yeah.
All right. So Maddox.
Yeah, so the thing is, like, Morgoth, he was, because he had like a little piece of all of Iluvatar in him, he was like, oh, I'm kind of the best. And in a sense, he was the best. He could do anything that Iluvatar could do, but he was smaller. Of course, he didn't have the secret of life and stuff because that was God's shit, not his. And so, like, he tried to create things, make his own melody in the song. And it happens, like, three times. And Iluvatar just, like, slowly weaves Morgoth's melody into it time and time again. And Morgoth gets frustrated, and everyone's like, why do we have to keep changing the tune? And, like, you know, it turns out all right in the end. But how that plays out in the actual world is that he goes into the world and he tries to, like, make his own life and stuff. But he figures out that he can't because, you know, his daddy keeps saying no. And then what he ends up doing is just, like, getting frustrated with his inability to do things and taking everything that's good and trying to turn it bad and, like, just annoying people, really. Maddox is at the point right now, I think, where he's reaching for the stuff that he can't do. And he could go back to doing the research like Data says. He could choose to do that, but, like, I don't know. He's kind of a dick.
Well, yeah, it's so interesting to think of, because I just think of Maddox as kind of like a jerk who's just like, you know, he's wrapped up in what he wants. The implication, especially when you're discussing broad themes like human displacement and slavery, thinking like this is the genesis of space Sauron.
Yeah.
We're about to get Lord of the Rings in space because there's going to be an army of malformed, poorly built data orcs just ravaging Starfleet and the Klingon Empire.
Because they're looking for data.
That's
yeah.
Oh,
but,
my God.
Yeah, right?
That's so interesting.
And then it would I had another thought, but where'd it go? We had because then, like, Sauron does the same thing, because after Melkor leaves, Sauron's like, well, now I want to do this stuff. Sauron was kind of a little shit, because Morgoth, he kind of tricked people into saying, hey, come to my side, we're gonna make cool shit, and Iluvatar is gonna be mad at us. And they're like, I don't know, man, that sounds pretty weird. And then Morgoth was like, nah, man, it'll be great. And they were like, they just sort of went with him. But then there are
it
other
sounds
people...
like that's what Maddox did to all of Starfleet in this episode.
Yeah, he tried to get that. But I mean, they're also even best of intentions. The Saruman ended up turning to Sauron and stuff because Saruman he wanted to learn how to beat Sauron. So like he started cozying up to him to try to get some intel from him so that, like, he could use it with the good guys in the war. But then he got corrupted by the power and the glory and the industry.
Yeah, it's like Eddington in season 3 of Deep Space Nine when he tries to learn more about the Maquis but ends up being a covert operations officer within Starfleet, betrays everybody on the Defiant, flies away, and Sisko chases him for the next season and a half. Am I right, guys?
Was that the plan, though? Or was it like...
I don't know.
The original thing that you made a metaphor for to... be a metaphor for the new.
Yeah,
wait,
we can
call
this. We can. No, it's the next series.
Yeah.
No, we should. This should be like it's a cascading metaphor.
Aren't we all?
Yeah, actually, we gotta have another episode about this book that I'm reading right now. But
we should.
Continue.
I'm not reading a book for you.
This talk of like people becoming corrupted by others. There's actually a song in Transistor called "We All Become" that the basic gist is. Going, get the hell out before we all just become consumed by this thing that is left unsaid.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's huge, scary white blocks and little things with red eyes. Yeah, it's pretty scary.
We'll play this game. Now, I know that this is the whole point of a common reading program or a book club, to learn more about the things that you just did. I've seen this episode like 6 times. I've watched Star Trek my whole life. This is like... I'm feeling enriched, like I understand this episode better. I'm like, oh, this is why people have been doing this for hundreds of years. This makes sense.
Speaking of creatures, some of which have glowing red eyes.
Take it on, Joe.
Anyway, so here I'm gonna bring this topic to a slightly more, I'm not gonna say more interesting, because clearly not, but a different perspective. I'm going to bring up, in the fifth generation of Pokemon games, you fight the evil team. Each generation has an evil team, right? Like Team Rocket is the one everyone's heard of. In the fifth generation of games, it is Team Plasma. Team Plasma's whole mantra and their whole, like, reason for being an evil team is basically, like, Pokemon are treated as slaves and we want to liberate them. Turns out Team Plasma's full of shit, but that, that is just their, it's their face motive.
It's their propaganda.
Yeah, yeah. Really, they're evil pieces of shit. But one character, one person, one of the kind of leader, not really leader, he's sort of, his name is N.
He's like their pretty face.
Mm. Yeah.
He's like the face of the group.
He's the face of the group. He actually believes this. He doesn't really realize that Getsis, the actual leader of Team Plasma and the rest of the organization, are actually just huge pieces of shit using his kind of whole ideals as a sort of face for their evil intentions. Mm. But nonetheless, N and his ideals still exist, where, like, this is the first time in the Pokemon games that it's brought up, just like, do Pokemon want to be our slaves and have and fight for us? Because it's all just, like, been told to us before, like, yeah, your Pokemon love battling with you, right? And going through this game, right, you really want to think, like, I see where N's coming from, but I think he's wrong. I think Pokemon really do want to battle for us, and we can't think about this in the same terms as we would think about humans, because Pokemon are different from humans, right? Like, they enjoy battling and being, like, a member of our party, and, like, being, like, they are self-aware, and they choose to be where they are.
Mm-hmm.
There is, however, a popular fan theory that N himself actually is a Pokemon.
In disguise?
Yes.
The whole time?
Yes. So there's this Pokemon called Zoroark, right? Which,
how many R's are in that name?
Zoroark 2.
Oh, okay. It sounded like Zoroark.
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 Zoroark Nixon edition.
Oh, God.
So Zoroark, this Pokemon's special thing is, its ability is basically that when it goes into battle, it disguises itself as the last Pokemon in your party. So it's the illusion Pokemon. It kind of, and several times throughout the game, you talk to some guy, and then that guy walks away and just, like, kind of, like, shifts into a Zoroark, and you're like, holy shit, I was just talking to a Zoroark right there. And N has a very long ponytail, as does Zoroark, and in Black and White 2, when you go to encounter N, you are led to his chamber by a Zoroark, it goes through the door, you walk in, it's no longer there, but N is standing there. So there's a theory that N is a Zoroark, which I bring up, it's relevant because it's like, it's easy to go through these games and just think like, no, I see where you're coming from, N, but I don't think you've thought about it enough. Pokemon really do like it. But if he is himself a Pokemon,
yeah,
then you're inclined to think his perspective a bit more. And then, largely these philosophical problems, since it's a children's game, are not really answered at the end of the game.
That makes sense.
They're just brought up and you're like,
so
am I supposed to continue?
So if I say the word, the words, the Prime Directive, does that mean anything to any of you guys?
Yeah, that's the directive where, like, Star Trek can't interview with lower civilizations.
Yeah,
yes. It's never been explicitly, like, written out as a protocol, but in its most currently defined state, the Prime Directive is that you cannot make yourself known to, interfere with, influence, subterfuge, anything, be involved with in any capacity, a civilization that has not yet developed faster than light travel. They need to develop to that point, and then you can make first contact and introduce them to this larger larger subgalactic society.
Basically, so you're not, like, influencing their values.
Exactly, and there are some interesting,
so that they don't pull a Christopher Columbus.
Yeah, sort of, kinda, and there are a few things that explore that metaphor specifically. But there are a few explorations in the franchise about, like, without this Prime Directive, like, what are we saying for the fate of this entire species? And when you said you were going to talk about Pokemon for this thing, I was like, I don't know how the fuck he's going to find any narrative depth in Pokemon to compare to Star Trek. But you did it. Star Trek is constantly evaluating humanity's role within the development of other species and how they're treated. And I'm kind of surprised that Pokemon addressed that at all. That sounds like a very deep thing.
It's
It's actually a recurring theme in their most recent installments. Yeah, like, Sun and Moon got fucked up.
I haven't been playing Sun and Moon at all.
You don't, yeah.
So, but I mean, like, what's going on there?
I mean, okay, but here's the
interdimensional thing. Colonization.
Wow, that escalated.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
See, pretty quickly.
I can stop talking about Pokemon. I just want to say that now it's just great because, like, multiverse theory is canon in Pokemon now.
Yeah.
Like, that's just a thing.
It kind of has to be since we got Red and then Fire Red or
it's basically gold. The multiverse thing being added to Pokemon was basically like a big answer to this thing that people have been complaining about a fucking while, which is like after I play one Pokemon game, they tell me there's only 150, and then the next Pokemon game, there's just suddenly more, and
so
they didn't
like,
discover these new things that are popping up all the time.
They're
so
in Pokedex.
So it's like saying in these, like they kind of explain that as like things living in different regions, but then it's just like, why does Kanto have 151 Pokemon living in it, where all the other regions have that plus more?
Yeah.
So their kind of answer to this was just like, it's the multiverse.
Hey, that's what Zelda did. Zelda did the same thing. Like, where do these games fall? Throw them all on a table. There you go. They're scattered. Wow.
So, the point of why I brought this up is just like, it's interesting to take N and put him into this perspective because N kind of represents the Picard.
Yeah.
Picard's role. But which means that you're kind of fighting for the opposite thing, which means you're the evil guy, and this is...
So you're playing, like, Riker's or Maddox's perspective.
Yeah.
Where you're advocating for, like, it's fine. We've never questioned this before. Let's just keep making this a subservient idea.
Exactly. But it's, like, it's bringing up an issue that really was not brought up in this, because obviously Data was on the side of, like, no, don't fucking kill me, right? But it's, like, bringing up the side of, like, can we speak for the Pokemon? Can we say for sure that they are, you know, not willing to be our servants when they've been putting up with it? It's like, do they want it or do they not? And it's just like, and that's an interesting, like, dilemma for a lot of, like, things with artificial intelligence, too. It's just like, can we apply the same sort of ethics that we apply to humans to machines? And does that really fit in all the same ways?
Yeah, because one of the big points of contention in the legal conversation around it is not like, is Data a person? Like, whether or not he's ruled as a person, his crewmates treat him, they call him him.
Yeah.
They call him you, Data, you, him. And Maddox calls him it the whole time. Still makes me cringe a little bit when it happens. But he always says, like, it's my right to choose. So more than just the identity, like, I'm sure in a lot of Pokemon games and cartoons, there's a lot of, hey, I'm bonded with you. You are my Pikachu. You are my Charizard.
Yeah, the Pokemon.
But it's like, but that alone is not freedom.
Right.
That's respect, but it's not, like, that extra level that Data is asking for. His right to choose.
Most of the time in the cartoon, like, in the anime, when Ash gets a Pokemon in his team, like, this motherfucker doesn't try to catch them all at all. Like, he just goes through his adventures. He encounters Pokemon. Sometimes he leaves, and sometimes he goes through these adventures with Pokemon. And then as he's like, all right, fuck off, bye. You want me to catch you? And then, like, as a thing of respect, they have a battle, and he catches them. But usually, on a general scale, the Pokemon is the one that initiates being on Ash's team. Wait, sorry.
Yeah.
Before we get away from it, I just want to say I was really irritated when what's-his-face is calling him it the whole time.
Yeah,
and then the last bit of the episode, he calls him. And then she mentioned it. She's just like, you called him this time. And
no!
I was like, why do you have to take subtlety and stab it in the face?
Coming back to that moment, I had a note, and it stuck out to me so much. Something stuck out to me so much when after Maddox says, I want to disassemble you. And before the legality comes in, and Picard is just like, all right, Data, you work for Starfleet. We have to entertain this notion. And he's like, he's done his research. And it's like, yes, I'm sure it has plenty of information. And Data calls Maddox it at about the 20-minute mark. And I was like, holy damn! This bitch has no feelings. He's got no feelings, but he's throwing some shade right now.
I thought you were saying the research as it.
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, no, I never caught that before. And I'm like, that's an interesting flip on the whole thing. And the whole point of Data in the show, to me anyway, is how do you take these things we feel strongly about and view them objectively? And it's really fun to see this whole argument, whether you apply it to, like, Lord of the Rings or Transistor or to Pokemon. It's like, what happens when you take all the feeling about it? Because all these franchises are rooted in like, oh my God, I feel like I'm losing to Sauron. I feel like we're going to lose Middle Earth. I'm dreading it. Or your attachment to things. Or the feeling of being ousted.
Like all the Pokemon is just like your bond with your team.
And this is like an objective conversation of, all right, well, what's actually at play here?
Yeah, no, actually most of it's like, everyone's like, I feel like everything's fine. And then Gandalf's like, no, we gotta do something about it.
With Transistor, it's like, at the end of the game.
Don't spoil it. It's so good.
I'm gonna play the game. We shouldn't spoil
it. We can talk about the beginning though, how like it's tell them at the beginning of the game, that's not my job.
No,
not my job.
Alright, what aspect of the beginning do you want me to talk about? Like,
oh well, I mean, your motivation is mostly
your motivation.
Yeah, you have two primary motivations. It's talking about the your voice and your boyfriend, really, right?
I had to play as a girl. No thanks.
The main problem we have here is Austin just knows a lot more about everything than the rest of us.
in the game, your primary motivation is to find the Camarada and see if like you can't bring back a guy out of the Transistor.
Oh, so it's kind of like season 6, episode 4 of Star Trek Generation, when they find Scotty suspended in a transporter buffer on the edge of a Dyson sphere for the last 80 years. Am I right, guys?
You can't kiss a Dyson sphere and feel fulfilled.
What?
Oh, well, I mean, the character's lover, right? That's definitely implied.
It's an implication.
Yeah.
It's not as subtle as Louvois' attraction to Captain Picard. Which, the first line, she says, hey, I haven't seen you in a while. I bet you want to bust a chair over my teeth.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that really how you do when you do the do? Like, what's...
That's some kinky shit.
Right? Man, Commander, you're into some kinky shit. Captain Commander, I can't remember.
Yeah, man. Like, the first fucking lines that they interchanged with each other were just like... I don't remember what he said specifically, but it was just like, yeah, like, oh,
they were
fuck.
Like, yeah. Like, I hate you. I hate you, too. We can have dinner. Wink, wink. Nudge, nudge.
I love the moment when she says, hey, you should ask me to dinner. And then that's when the Admiral walks in. But there's just, like, a shot on Picard's face. Like, ask me to dinner. And he just looks down like, he doesn't answer. He just looks down and crumples his face. And then the Admiral interrupts. Says, oh, fucking thank God. Fun fact, if it adds any sort of, you know, button onto the end of this for you guys. In season 4, there's an episode called Data's Day, where Data just chronicles his entire day to take you through. It's really good.
Yeah.
And it's framed where in the beginning he says, dear Commander Maddox, I agree that your research lacks enough first, like primary examples for continuing blah, blah, blah. So 2 years later, Maddox is still researching this and Data is still in correspondence with him, providing him information to help him with the research. So despite the fact that Maddox almost tried to kill him, everything's actually kind of okay. You guys, whether from your respective domains or just as whatever, if you were in like the courtroom, if you had to like be Picard or be Riker or be Commander Louvois without wanting to fuck Picard,
I mean, I kind of want to fuck Picard, but
he did. He got Sexiest Man Alive in the early 90s, and I think she even damn sexy man. In the episode. But
damn sexy man.
If you were...
That woman has no respect for subtlety.
Yeah, seriously.
Who wrote the episode is another question.
It was actually a spec script by a lawyer. So that explains where it comes from. Let me actually look this up again. But no, it was a spec script and this person was brought on and continued to write through season 3. I don't remember the name. It starts with an S. Robert Shearer. So do you guys know what a spec script is? So a spec script is when you as a fan basically write an episode. It's essentially a fan fiction that gets adopted by the canon. In this case, Robert Shearer was a former attorney and he was a novelist for the original series. So he had experience with Star Trek. So he was like, hey, I have all this stuff. Let me write this episode. I think this is a good idea. And it turned out to be amazing. If you guys were in the courtroom, if you were one of these people or if you were a juror or if you were the bailiff, I don't know, space bailiff, I watched that show. Are there any points that you guys would bring up?
I did have something. I was just like, when talking about self-awareness in the episode, they didn't bring up as much of like what self-awareness is, and it's like, is it important that Data is self-aware, or is it important that Data is as self-aware as humans? Because like, you could say that like Data, all of his like emotions, quote unquote, right, are programmed things technically, right? Like, and that's what makes him appear self-aware, right? Mm-hmm. But that is also what makes humans appear self-aware, whereas like we are also just like, and they like get it at a little bit, like Picard like says like, oh, we're machines too or something like that, right? But I was kind of hoping that they would maybe bring up the argument of like, should we be talking about, is Data this like totally sentient being, or does he need to be a totally sentient being? Does he just need to be as sentient as humans are?
During that part, I had kind of the same thought, but more along the lines of, this, they're basically talking about the Turing test.
Yeah.
The idea, like, is it a human? How do we tell? You need to convince someone that you're a human through, like, a blind test. I would have liked for them to at least mention the Turing test, since they have throwbacks to Asimov and his basic ideas on sci-fi robotics.
Yeah. And it was, sorry to jump in again, but it was interesting that they let Data respond as an objective witness. And like that kind of thing was very interesting, because like in part of their point, right, they would ask him questions.
Mm-hmm.
But like, he's clearly on one side. So like, would it not be in his best interest to like to say things in a certain way? But then if he's responding to things in something that is in his best interest, does that not already prove the point, right?
Yeah.
You know, so it's like,
it's self-preservation.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's either like, do we listen to him objectively, or do we concede that it might not be objective, in which case he's already won.
Yeah.
Although I do remember there was an episode in Star Trek where like everyone wakes up a few hours and with a few hours missing, and only Data knew. And
watched that episode recently.
and they're, you know, they're season, all like, Data, you gotta tell us what happened.
Yeah,
like,
season 5, episode, around episode 11,
and
Clues. Very good, very fun.
Yeah, and basically, why are you lying, Data? You don't lie, Data.
Yeah.
You're programmed not to lie, Data.
And the podcast that I've been listening to about Star Trek, The Greatest Generation, you don't need to be a Trekkie to like this. Shout out, it's a sponsorship, whatever, I don't care.
it's not a sponsorship.
I don't know. Please, Adam and Ben. The Greatest Generation, they point out a lot in the show that Data is constantly being compromised to some extent and like putting the entire ship in danger. So they go through this episode establishing his personhood and his right to choose. And there are so many times in the franchise that he loses control of himself through whatever reason and puts everyone in danger in a way that wouldn't happen to a person.
Yeah.
Like, there's an episode where his programming gets overridden while a kid is sick and he diverts the ship and locks everything down. And they're like, this kid's going to die. He's like, I gotta go talk to someone. I'll be right back. It's like, what? That's probably something I would have brought up, is like, there are legitimate considerations to how you treat someone who can be hacked.
Yeah, that reminds me of, it reminds me of, like, in Justice League Doom, some evil villain, hacks into the Batcave and gets Batman's contingency plans on how to kill all of the other heroes.
Oh.
So the question is just, so everyone's like, what the fuck, Batman? And it's just like, we all are mind controlled, like, on a regular basis. So, and like, what if one of us turned evil? We need a contingency plan. And they're like, we're not going to turn evil. And I'm just like, he's got a point that there are multiple mind controlling like things in the universe. And Superman's really powerful.
At no point do they ever say like, maybe we should like have another trial. Like, Measure of a Man 2.
I mean,
Android Googler.
You know, technically, people can be hacked too. Psychological torture,
it just takes more time.
I've seen The Winter Soldier.
So to get back on to your question on what would we ask if we were in that courtroom, Data is shown to be able to do many things: play music, do art, do all these things. If there was an entire race of Data, what would they come to replace people in those things. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And that actually pays directly to, like, the idea of displacement of, like even within the Federation, trying to protect new life, what happens when we're less important? They don't really talk about that identity as a race, humanity at least.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Like, if you get rid of all of the, like, jobs that people have, like, if you get rid of all the factory work and shit like that, right, and everything is controlled by robots, and in this ideal society, maybe people just are given things. Then what happens when you meet other races that still have, like, a work-based system?
Mm-hmm.
The people in this world, the people in our world, no longer have the capacity to understand that mentality. And is it important that we keep the ability to understand that mentality?
Anyway, I don't know. If do you guys have any other kind of, like, last minute points, things you want to bring up?
Well, what were you going to say about transistor cheddar?
Yeah.
Well, you were saying that, like, you know, people being given stuff and whatnot, and it's kind of implying that, much like Star Trek, transistor is post-scarcity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Post-scarcity. That's a big thing. Yeah. Well, that's this is branching away from, I think, the legal and ethical predilections of Measure of a Man into what happens when you become a post-scarcity society. So I'm going to say, let's table that discussion for 2063, when the Vulcans make first contact, and then we slowly begin our meteoric rise to found the Federation in 2163. All right, well.
It's very optimistic.
It's very optimistic. So I've been Colin.
I've been Austin, and I will continue.
Yeah, same. Well, I'm not Austin. I'm Jeff.
I'm Timel or Chowder, whichever you prefer.
He's really both.
Thanks for listening to the Common Geeking program. I hope it was enjoyable. This was our first round. It actually went a lot deeper than I thought. Next time, we're going to pick totally different hosts, totally different topics, so it won't just be... This is not a Star Trek podcast. I'm going to say that right now. This is not a Star Trek podcast. Thanks again. We'll talk to you later.
Nidorino.
Hey, this first episode of the Common Geeking program was hosted by me, Colin Ketchin. I was joined by Austin Liebers, Jeff Levitt, and Timel Chowdhury. The episode is sponsored by Nobody, hence the amazing audio quality throughout. The podcast is designed and produced by Colin Ketchin and Jeff Levitt, with original music by Colin Ketchin, and this episode edited by Colin Ketchin. You can support us by looking up the Common Geeking program on Facebook, Twitter, and SoundCloud, and reviewing us on iTunes. Now, our next episode is going to be hosted by Austin talking about a webcomic called Kill 6 Billion Demons. Give it a read and listen in next time to hear what we have to say. And thank you for listening to this. Live long and prosper.
Well, no, we're gonna.
What is this?
First repetition. Tell me how hand soap can keep my hands smelling cleaner than, THEN, 90% of you females can with your puss, I don't understand. So he's either complaining that people don't wash their genitals with hand soap, or he's complaining that when he tries to wash his hands with someone's genitals, it only works 1 time out of 10.
I
don't understand.
I don't hate my previous statement, which is a podcast.
Oh my god. I recorded that. We're keeping that. That's going somewhere. That's going somewhere.